was already written, I would rise to the top. Now I give it everything that I got. Yeah, I'm gon' ball, yeah, I'm gon' be prepared for them suckers that be hating on me. Raised in the world that's so cold, why so much hate, I don't know. Stereotyped and they can't see how it is growing up as a young G.
Game. Now they've lost Robert Griffin III for some period of time. We'll find out how long after he goes under the knife. Welcome into the Sporting News Studios. I'm Tom Bandhort, here to talk with me about RG3, our NFL writer Cliff Brown. And Cliff, boy, it's been tough for the Redskins watching this happen to RG3. And just looking back a little bit first, I know it's hindsight now, but can you question at all the way Mike Shanahan handled his quarterback in that playoff game?
Well, I certainly questioned it, and I questioned it during the game, as I wrote about Monday for Sporting News, that I just felt that Griffin could not protect himself sufficiently on the field. He had a rollout in the second half to his left where he was really limping and kind of took a gimpy gait out of bounds. At that point, I became fearful for his safety, and I had no idea that it was going to end the way it did with him crumpling to the turf without being hit. But in my feeling, it didn't have anything to do with the fact it was a playoff game, how close the game was, how well he was.
Well, guys, as you heard it, that was discussion on RG3 knee. That's right, I said RG3 knee. As you know, today he went up under the knife. He had surgery on the ACL as well as the LCL. We're going to get into a little bit of that talk with our NFL insider Von Carter later in the show at 8:30. We're going to get into that discussion. Was RG3 left in the game too long? We're also going to get into Ray Lewis Dance. Some people, fellow UM player, felt the dance was disrespectful that Ray Lewis did at the end of the game, ending his career during the regular season, dancing on the field. We're going to get into some talk about what went on at the coach convention, what goes on at the coaches convention. With Julie Corona, who will be coming on the show at 8:05, we're going to get into that talk. We're going to get into the Under Armour game as well as the Army All-American game that took place this past weekend. And what go into these events, the Army game as well as the Under Armour game, and what goes on at the coaches convention itself, the National Coaches Convention goes on. Julie Corona was on scene at the National Coaches Convention, and she's going to give us her insight on the things that takes place at a National Coaches Convention. I've been to several, and man, it is crazy. But without further ado, let's bring to the show our high school expert insider, Julie Corona. Welcome to the Tony Sands Show, Julie Corona.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Julie, I'm doing well. I'm doing very good at this moment. You know, it was a rough couple of days spending time at the Army All-American weekend watching so many young men try to buy for that one spot one day in the NFL, because these young men were around a lot of NFL guys, and you could see in their eyes that they want that opportunity. So it was an exciting weekend for me, a tiring weekend, but it was exciting. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it being around the young guys. I enjoyed making friendship with young men all across the country and just hearing what they have to say about the game that they love. But
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I was just at the coaches' convention, so I'm a little worn out like you, Tony. You know.
But, Julie, tell me this. Crazy week. Tell me this. What goes on at a national coaches' convention such as that?
Well, I mean, every college coach in the country will go to the national convention at the end of the year. You know, a lot of it could be just the fact of almost like a celebration for the coaches that they've made it through the year, and they have a lot of nice speakers that go and talk, head coaches. They have tools on recruiting, updates for, you know, anything that's changing in the world of recruiting for the coaches. A lot of vendors across the country are there trying to get their products across to the coaches. You know, the sad part about the coaches convention, you know, that I see were all the coaches that had just recently lost jobs. You know, I think everyone misses, you know, we're all talking about all these other things, but there's coaches there that, that don't know where their next move is.
And Julie, you know, I had an opportunity to see that. I did get a chance to see that, you know, several times at the coaching convention I went to. They got this big, and people visualize this. It's a big old, huge, huge board that's up. This board is filled with resumes on both sides. Both sides. You got guys waiting there to try to get jobs. You got guys that have driven all the way to Nashville that are sleeping in cars trying to get an opportunity to interview with the school. Julie, what were some of the things that some of the guys were saying to you, those ones that were trying to get a job?
Just saying how much this business has changed. You know, on the fact that really here today, gone tomorrow.
Correct.
You know, and with the amount of coaches that are out there now, where before, you know, you pretty much had a buddy that maybe go to another school, be able to get on. It doesn't work like that anymore.
Correct.
You know, there's so much more involved in what's happening. The guys who lose their job and are lucky enough to get a phone call, you know, right after, you know, those guys you'll never see. But then you have the ones that have done a decent job, you know, coaching, and they're still standing there waiting for their opportunity. You know, it's just, it's a luck draw in who you know, really.
But one thing I always say, and you spoke about change, and one thing that has changed, I think, for the good of coaches, especially those ones that get fired and have an opportunity, you know, a lot of coaches now, assistant coaches, are signing two-year deals.
Yeah.
They are signing the two-year deals that will help them display an opportunity to still, you know, feel a little safe with the two-year deal, but continue looking for a job. And I know that doesn't make a
picture. That happens at the higher levels, really.
Correct, correct.
It doesn't happen on the lower Division One level.
Correct, you're right.
A lot of those guys are coaching without any provisions in place.
That's correct. That is correct. And that's, like I said, that's the sad part about it. You know, you're here today and you're going tomorrow, as you spoke on. What we mean by that, people, is that, you know, as a matter of fact, let's hear what we're talking about. Rob Ryan with the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm using this as an example. Rob Ryan was on vacation when Jerry Jones called him and told him that his services would no longer be needed with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Will no longer be needed. You're on vacation and you get this call. And can you imagine what that feels like to a guy that probably just moved to an area, uprooted his family, they've moved to a certain city, your kids have gotten adjusted in school, and now a year go by and all of a sudden you get a call that your services are no longer needed, whether you hear it from a head coach or you hear it on the air. I'm going to tell you, I was around when the Mark D'Antonio, who's now is the present coach for Michigan State, found out how he got fired. He got fired. He found out on the way into work via radio. And it was devastating to him at that time because, you know, here you are at that time, you know, coaches wasn't making it wasn't a lot of money in coaching in the early 90s, late 80s. You know, if a guy was making 30,000, 40,000, probably 40-something thousand, that was a lot of money at that time in the coaching field. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're told your services are no longer needed. He took it pretty hard. He took it real. As a matter of fact, me and him went to a donut shop and you know, we had some coffee and I talked to him and we was talking, you know, that's when I thought about venturing into coaching, Julie, and found out maybe this thing is not for me. You got to love coaching. And I like the game. I love the game. I love the game. I didn't love coaching at that much because I didn't know really coming out of playing football what really goes into coaching. And there's a lot that goes into coaching.
Well, you know, too, Tony, what I found and you know, what I heard a lot this past weekend, too, was that coaches are now not even moving their families. You know, if they're when this happens, they're not, you know, going to uproot their children. So now you've got a lot of coaches' families left behind until something, you know, they get a new job, but they need it to be secure to move their families. It almost reminds me of like the Army where these guys get stationed all over.
And I'm going to tell you, Julie, and now that you mentioned that and you said now coaches are not moving their family. People, let me tell you this. Coaching has the highest divorce rate of any profession. Of any profession. Yeah. Because you're gone all the time. When football season, when the season is over, you're on the road recruiting. So it puts a lot of
stress on. There is no downtime for coaches.
Exactly. And with the demand to win and the money's been put into this sport, man, the pressure heats up. You're in the fire every time you take a job, every time, because you're competing. I was heading out back on the plane from San Antonio, and I seen several coaches on the plane with me, with the young men getting on the plane. So, you know, I was at it shocked me because I thought that was something that wasn't supposed to take place, but it did. I'm not going to call any schools that I saw, but a lot of that did take place. And here you are. You got all these guys, these young men that just played in this Army game, all Americans, on this plane. Now you're on the plane. You got coaches on the plane. Here to them, that's another opportunity. I guess you got to do whatever you got to do to make this thing work because it is a high demanding field when it comes down to it. But you, let's also get into, was there any new rules that were set forth that would be changed at the NCAA level?
Not really that I heard of. I mean, the thing is, you know, and I don't know that a lot of people are aware of this, and kids need to be aware of it, because this is a rule that most kids wouldn't know, and maybe even coaches. You know, if you're at a four-year university and you're doing your senior year and you choose to leave and maybe try to, for instance, you've got a year to play and one to sit with your red shirt that you have yet to burn. Most people would say, well, drop down to D1AA, you can play right away. Well, the NCAA has changed that rule a couple of years ago, and people aren't aware of it. You still have to sit regardless of bumping down if that's your senior year.
Wait a minute now. So you're saying if you're in your senior year, now, if you're in your senior and you haven't graduated, and you haven't graduated, you still have to sit even though you drop down.
Yes.
Because I know that's a misconception.
Drop down to D1AA in your senior year and then think that you're going to play. The rule is that you will still have to sit 1 year and then, you know, with your red shirt, and then you'll be able to play.
Wow. And
yeah,
that's if you haven't burnt
the red shirt. That a lot of people don't know.
And that's if you haven't burnt that red shirt year.
Exactly.
Because if you burnt that red shirt year.
Because years ago, what was happening is kids in their senior year, if they weren't playing or, you know, felt like they would have a better opportunity to be able to hit the field more, they had too many kids leaving and being able to do that. So what happened was the NCAA implemented a new rule that would state in your senior year, even if you have a redshirt year to burn, you still have to sit that year, and then you would be able to play the following year. So there's no difference. You should remain in Division I then.
Wow. Yeah, because you're stuck. Technically,
nothing you can do.
Unless you're a guy, people that you've graduated early, then that senior year you can transfer to any way you want and be eligible right away because you are a graduating student.
Correct. If you're going on to get your master's and you have time left, then yes, you can switch and there's no penalty.
And there's no penalty. As a matter of fact, the quarterback from Kansas last year, transferred to Colorado, but he had to hurry up and graduate over the summer in order to be eligible to play at Colorado right away. And he put his nose to the grind and made sure that takes place because that was his only way because when the new coach came in, he told him that, buddy, we're going in a different direction. Imagine you've been at a place 3 years and you're waiting on your time. You've played a little bit, you know, and you're thinking, okay, now this is the new year coming. It is definitely mine. And all of a sudden a new coach come in and tell you your services will no longer be needed here. You can seek to find shelter elsewhere.
Right.
That's got to be devastating. That
you have to finish your BS degree and be entering into your master's to be able to do that.
Correct. And what I'm finding also, I'm finding some guys that that are transferring down is having a lot of success, and they're enjoying the game of football that they once loved. Because I'm going to tell you, people, once you get to that big boy level with that pressure, man, you start questioning, do you still love the game of football? Do you still love it?
Exactly.
And it's tough to love
it. That doesn't mean, too, you know, a lot of kids assume if they drop down that their dreams of furthering football isn't going to happen. You know, I'd be interested to see, and I think we've talked about this before, Tony, is for someone to actually do a study and take and say how many of those kids that really played Division I AA ball or dropped down really got to have their dream come true, because it's more than people know.
I'm going to call out a couple names. I'm going to throw out a couple names of players that went on to have successful career at the NFL level. Jerry Rice, Walter Payton, Terrell Owens. Those are guys that played at the lower level and had a successful NFL career. So, people, your dreams still continue. It's what you got in your heart. You can cocaine it in your heart, and you continue to want that dream. It will take place, because guess what? All colleges now have a pro timing day. So that doesn't shatter your dreams at all.
No, so and you have to be on the field. How will people know about you if you're never going to be on the field accumulating and showing what you can do? You have to have film. It's no different. You still have to have film.
That is correct. Julie, we're going to head into a commercial, and then I got to head to Dallas to speak with one of our insiders from Dallas on the Rob Ryan firing in Dallas, Texas, that took place today. Jerry Jones stated that there will be some uncomfortable people in the Cowboys facility for several months, and he's already shaking up the natives. Julie, I'll talk with you later. I'll call you so we can continue to talk about what we got to do as far as some of the symposium young men that are taking place that are going to change your life and change how you view the game of football. But that's later on. We'll give that to you. See you later, Julie. We're heading to
the
commercial.
Bye-bye.
All right, take it easy.
Get some rest, Tony. Get some rest.
I definitely will.
Okay.
Now we're going to head to a commercial break. Come back with Mr. Beer.
If you have the need for speed, or do you simply just want to lose weight, or get the best training to help you develop your skills, whether it's football or any other sport, just to name a few different skills you can learn, like agility, balance, coordination, assistance, and resistance. In order to be the best, you got to get trained by the best. Tony Sands at GetSensational.com. For more information, call 954-691-7804. Once again, 954-691-7804. Call now. If you have the need for speed, or do you simply just want to lose weight, or get the best training to help you develop your skills, whether it's football or any other sport, just to name a few different skills you can learn, like agility, balance, coordination, assistance, and resistance. In order to be the best, you got to get trained by the best. Tony Sands at GetSensational.com. For more information, call 954-691-7804. Once again, 954-691-7804. Call now.
Still be a baby. Can it run? Can it catch? Can it throw? Are you ready? Are you ready? You got quick feet. Can it move? Can it go? Are you ready? Are you ready? Can it run? Can it catch? Can it throw? Are you ready? Are you ready? You got quick feet. Can it move? Can it go? Hey, do we got that UM swag? Hey, do we got that UM swag? Hey, do we got that UM swag? Hey, do they got that UM swag?
The word out of Dallas, Texas, Jerry Jones picked Rob Ryan as Cowboy Scapegoat is the title of SI.com. Jerry Jones picked Rob Ryan as Cowboy Scapegoat. Jerry Jones spoke last week on his radio show, and he stated that there will be some uncomfortable days at the Cowboys facility for the next couple months. And guess what, folks? He has just made some people uncomfortable. But to get into that a little more in detail with someone that's on the ground in the Dallas area, let's go to our boy Bibbs to get the insight on what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys. How you doing, Mr. Bibbs?
I'm doing pretty good, Tony. How you doing?
Man, I'm excited to talk with you because I know you got the scoop on what's going on out there in Big D with America's team. Jerry Jones is starting to make some people uncomfortable.
Yeah, he said he was going to do that. I guess that's what he meant. Yeah. He was going to make some heads roll. So I guess he started with the chopping of what was the running back's coach, Skip Pete, first.
And then Skip Pete first.
Down to the defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan. And it's pretty – honestly, down here in Dallas, it's kind of a laughable situation because a lot of people feel like he fired the wrong person.
And that's the feeling that everybody's talking about, that did he do the right thing by firing Rob Ryan? Because the defense was banged up.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going to go. In my opinion, I honestly think he did fire the wrong person because I don't really see how you can blame a defensive coordinator that had your team still in contention for a division crown and in contention to make the playoffs with, like, 9 defensive starters missing.
Exactly.
Like, how could you fire someone that that was able to hold the glue together after losing so many players? Like, his defensive squad was gutted with injuries. People on IR, people missing games throughout the season. And to still be in contention for a playoff berth, not to mention to a division crown, you let him go?
And that's what people got to understand is that you know, your ranking is misleading because you must understand you had injuries. You had several injuries on this defense. What are some of the people are saying out in Dallas on who they think probably should have got the axe or change that should have taken place?
Well, the person that most people feel that should have got the axe is Jason Garrett.
Wow.
The head coach. You know, that's what I've been hearing on the talk radio shows and the sports radio shows and the articles that I've been reading, that if you were going to fire Rob Ryan, of all people, then why didn't you fire Jason Garrett and just start over fresh, clean slate?
Just start a clean slate. Just start a clean slate.
You know, like I mean, like you said, statistically, the Cowboys' defense wasn't as great as it was supposed to be in the second half of the season. But that's all due to the lack of depth at certain positions and, of course, all the injuries. If you go back earlier in the season, the first half of the season, the Cowboys statistically were one of the top 10 defenses in the NFL.
Correct.
Once they lost their middle linebacker, the heart and soul of the defense, Sean Lee. Then they lost the second heart, the next linebacker up, Bruce Carter. And not to mention their best defensive lineman, Jay Ratliff, didn't play most of the season. How could you have put any blame on Rob Ryan? He pieced together what he could put together, which I thought was a good enough job. And his team went out and fought each and every Sunday. to you know, come out with victories. Now, they came out on the other end of the stick a couple of times, but at the same time, you have to put some blame on the offense because the offense didn't do too much to help them with all the turnovers, interceptions that they had, and the lack of a run game. So there's a lot of things that can contribute to the unsuccess the success that the Cowboys did not have this year.
And that's what's being spoke about. You hear people speaking more about the offense because they can understand and sympathize with Rob Ryan with the injuries that he had, especially at the key positions that he needed his key guys. And these guys still play for him now, banged up and all. So that tells you a lot about a guy when his players are willing to stick with him regardless and fight through the injuries because they want to make this coach look good. I know it's been unheard of in the Cowboys organization and around Dallas with all the changes that will take place, because there's going to be a lot of changes, I think, more to come. There's more guys to come. I think he's going to shake this thing up so much that it's going to be unbelievable. Skip Pete, like you said, was another coach that got the axe. And despite Skip Pete being a running back coach, I'm trying to figure out, I guess he said the running game wasn't effective, so I get rid of the running back coach. I don't know if that was the right thing, but, you know, how much can a running back coach do? Because the offensive coordinator's got to make the calls. And who was the offensive coordinator? Jason Garrett.
I don't see how you can let go of Skip Pete. Like, it wasn't his fault that DeMarco Murray missed 6 games with a foot injury. He couldn't prevent that. It wasn't his fault that his second-string running back came into camp, talking about Felix Jones, came into camp out of shape, didn't pass conditioning test. It wasn't his fault that he had a rookie out of the University of North Texas running the ball. And like, all those circumstances he could not control. And not to mention he had lack of production on the offensive line all season. How do you get rid of the running back coach?
I'm going to tell you something.
Running back coach?
This is the ranking of hiring that takes place on the offensive side. You get a guy, the tight end coach is the lowest coach on the offensive side. And then it goes to the running back coach. Then it's the receivers coach, quarterback, and then the offensive coordinator. 9 times out of 10, a lot of places, the offensive coordinator is the quarterback coach. So running back coach is down on the totem pole when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. But I guess Jason Garrett needs to probably take a look at this and understand that there's going to be some more changes. It's out of his hands on who Jerry Jones is going to bring in to assist him. I still think Jerry Jones is going to bring an OC in to help Jason Garrett with the play calling, if not script Jason Garrett of the play calling. And if you script him of the play calling, then, folks, guess what? You got one shot left, because the next shot, you will be out the door. This would not be tolerated in another season. Jerry Jones built that palace, spent over $1 billion in it, and guess what? He wants results, and this is the way he is running his operation, that he needs to get results on this thing. Bibbs, man, hey, it was nice to have a chat with you about this thing, man. We got to get into this more. We got to stay into it longer. We got to head to commercial because now we're going to our insider from Denver to continue to talk about RG3 and what's going on with Ray Lewis dance that was disrespectful in the eyesight of Reggie Wayne. Bibbs, man, I was thinking we're going to go to commercial break, and then we're coming back here on the Tony Sands Show to talk RG3. Did he stay in the game too long? Up to you here on the Tony Sands Show.
Sensational parties and more by Clandra Sands. Ready to decorate for your occasion. Whether it's for weddings, baby showers, anniversary, graduations, homecoming, cherries, proms, and more. Give them a call. They have it all. She caters to all Tri-County areas, Palm Beach County, Broward and Dade County. Also, ask about affordable party packages. She has one to fit your party budget. Call and mention this ad and receive
$50 off your service.
That's right,
$50 off your services. Presented to you by Sensational Parties and More by Clandra Sands. Call at 954-708-0581. That's 954-708-0581. Call now.
I would rise to the top. Now I give it everything that I got. Yeah, I'm gon' ball. Yeah, I'm gon' be prepared for them suckers that be hating on me. Praise in the world that's so cold. Why so much hate? I don't know. Stereotyped and they can't see how it is growing up as a young G.
You're welcome back here to the Tony Sands Show. And as I told you, we're gonna get into some of this RG. RG3 the third. Man, I'm going to tell you something. It's some strange things going on in the D.C. area. Strange things going on in the D.C. area. Did RG3 hurt himself by staying in the game? Did his head coach tarnish his image by leaving the franchise quarterback in the game too long? This has hurt the Washington Redskins for a minute. If this young man cannot return back to the season to full form for the 2013 season, it's going to be devastating to see where do the Washington Redskins go at this point to fulfill that quarterback position. And as you know, he went under the knife today, and had surgery. But come to find out, not only did he have his LCL repaired, but he had his ACL repaired. And that was the previous injury that happened in 2009. And Doc felt that it was best to go ahead now and repair that than to wait. Just go ahead, since I got him open, let's repair it. Let's build it stronger. Supposedly this injury is anywhere from, you know, 6 to 8 months, depending on the recovery speed of RG3. As you see with the new changes that's going on now in this game, you see how fast Adrian Peterson returned to full form less than a year at the running back position. So you know that it can be done. You know it can be done. So I'm curious to see, do RG3 have the same drive that Adrian Peterson have when it comes to repairing, fast recovery from the surgery that he had today on his ACL and LCL? Is, you know, the best thing about it, Adrian Peterson blew out the whole knee. RG3 didn't blow out his whole knee. He didn't. Guys, if you want to home in on this topic, you can call us here on the Tony Sands Show at 530-513-6472. That's 530-513-6472. Without further ado, we got my main man, our NFL insider for the Broncos, Von Carter, has joined the Tony Sands Show. Von, what's up, man?
How's everything, Tony? Thanks for having me back on.
Man, I love when I can have you on, because me and you, we go back and forth on the phone so much. And I, you know, people want to know, you know, right now the Broncos are at the top of the charts when it comes to taking care of business. But before we get into that, let's talk some RG3.
Okay.
Do you feel that RG3 himself hurt himself, or do you feel the coach hurt RG3 by leaving him in the game too long?
Well, I'll be totally honest with you. It's a hot topic right now. My personal opinion is that, you know, Mike Shanahan, at that time when the score was 14-0 and RG3 rolled to his right and it looked like his leg gave out on him when he attempted to make a pass and he fell out of bounds.
Correct.
I think personally at that time Mike Shanahan should have removed him with a 14-point lead at home, okay? And, you know, if he would have happened to lose the game, you know, no harm, no foul, so to speak. But I think it was important for Mike Shanahan to take the safety into consideration. RG3 is a great athlete, and he wants to play. The kid's energized, and he doesn't want to leave his teammates on the field. But now we see with the you know, the price that they have to actually pay now due to the fact that this young man now has two severe tears in his knee.
And you got to figure, you're talking about a knee that was injured previously already anyway. At one
That's
point
right.
in 2009.
That's in right. 2009, I think it's a bad situation for the Redskins.
Now, the question is going to be, how fast did this young man come back from this knee injury? Can he recover as fast as Adrian Peterson did? I don't know. He has the best, you know, doctor that you know, that money can buy when it comes to surgery in the NFL. But dude, this puts the Redskins in a tough situation that if he's not ready, your franchise quarterback in 1 year, out the next, how much does this weigh on what Mike Shanahan will be able to do next year with the backup quarterback?
Well, that's a great question right there. I think personally that, you know, the same doctor who is Dr. Andrews, is the same person who did the surgery for Adrian Peterson.
Correct.
I think, you know, RG3 is going to come out successful in terms of the surgery. But as you mentioned, on the recovery time and then what actually happens, how that translates to his performance on the field is going to be a huge, huge thing that we all have to sit and watch and see. I think, though, the difference between Adrian Peterson's injury and RG3's injury is the LCL is such a unique joint and a muscle there that, you know, for that to be torn like that, I think that's going to be huge.
Exactly. I mean, real, real huge. I always say when it comes to knee, you know, knees, when it comes to the running back position, when it comes to the quarterback position, when it comes to the receiver's position, because you put so much pressure on your knee joint when you're making breaks, when you're making cuts. That's a tough call. You know, it's a little different for our offensive linemen because they're not making plants and cuts as hard as a skill position person. So it's going to be interesting to see how this recovery comes out. How it comes out, you got to figure that. You got to figure the ACL also. Now, people understand that is, you know, that's that tissue that connect to that thigh, to the thigh bone.
Right.
Now, when you're tearing that, you know, you're tearing that. That means that's been cut, man. That's deep. That
is. You mentioned before. I mean, he's already had surgery on the same knee already.
Correct.
Which is huge. I mean, they're going to have their backup quarterback, I think. You know, their backup quarterback's going to have to totally be ready to go. You know, I think it's Kirk Cousins is their backup, the young man that they drafted recently out of the University of Michigan State. So I think that, you know, he's played some decent ball, but he's going to have to totally be ready, I think, because I do not think RG3 is going to start the season as the Washington Redskins starting quarterback.
Correct. Now, and tell me this. Now, do you go in the draft saying, I got to draft a quarterback late? Just in case.
I don't think so. I think being that that they got Kirk Cousins in the draft last year along with RG3, you know, it's a unique thing that they actually did where they actually drafted two quarterbacks last year. So,
correct.
You know, when RG3 went down this year, Kirk Cousins filled in admirably. You know, so I think you know, Mike Shanahan and his son, Kyle Shanahan, I think they're going to try to mold the young man to be kind of like a career backup, kind of like how Gary Kubiak was to John Elway.
Right. But now I'm going to tell you something. It's going to be a hot quarterback on the market that's similar to RG3, not, you know, big as RG3. Michael Vick, do you take a chance on bringing Michael Vick in just in case RG3 is not ready for you?
I don't think so. Michael Vick is going to try to I kind of expect Michael Vick to be traded to the Kansas City Chiefs, to be honest with you.
Okay. So you're assuming that he's going to follow Reed to Kansas City?
Absolutely. I think the Kansas City situation is very unstable in terms of the quarterback position with Matt Castle currently being under the contract. And I think that Andy Reid's going to want to bring some form of familiarity to his organization over in Kansas City now, and I think he'll try to pull off a trade where he can try to acquire Michael Vick as a starting quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's correct. Now, hey, I want we're going to listen to this soundbite because this is something that just was breaking news today. We're going to listen to the soundbite with Ray Lewis and how Ray Lewis celebrated the ending of the game when they beat the Indianapolis Colts that has caused controversy, as I call it, within the family ranks of the UM players. Let's listen to this soundbite and see just what I'm talking about.
Weekend as he played his final game in Baltimore at M&T Bank Stadium. Playing 17 years in one place is rare. It's really almost unheard of in this day and age in sports. And the fact that Lewis has been in Baltimore his entire career is something that he's most proud of as he goes through his final postseason run.
Out of everything that's been going on, that's the biggest thing that has probably had me more excited than that I've been able to stay in one place for so long. You watch so many players go in and out and stuff with team to team, man. And for me to be here, I was 18 years old when I came here. You know, I was a kid then, didn't have a clue what was going on. And now I grew with the city. The city grew with me. And it's one thing that we will never have to complicate it. That way I will die early. And that being said, that's an awesome, awesome, awesome feeling. And there's no greater achievement for me, myself, to say that I've always been connected to one thing my whole life.
And as Lewis plays his last games in Baltimore, one of the things he's thought about recently is the man who brought the Ravens to Baltimore, former owner Art Modell, who passed away earlier this season.
His legacy will never die, you know, so it's always something that's on my mind, you know, and not just his. You know, a lot of people that I've lost over the years, I take them with me every time I go on the football field, but he's one of those special ones, and I know that, you know, if we have the ability to look down from heaven, then he's smiling. He's smiling because I know he'll be pulling in here right now, you know, saying, here we go again.
And Lewis doesn't want his final run to end anytime soon. He hopes that Saturday isn't his last time on the field. So Ravens travel to Denver to take on the Broncos.
Now, I'm going to tell you, you heard that soundbite. Now,
absolutely.
Ray Lewis danced on the field at the end, celebrating his great career. Reggie Wayne came out on radio today and say he felt that dance was disrespectful to the Indianapolis Colts. He felt it was disrespectful. What's your opinion on that?
Well, you know, I think both guys are, obviously Ray Lewis is probably the greatest middle linebacker ever to play the game. And I think Reggie Wayne is a great wide receiver in the career that he's had. And I think one day he possibly could be a Hall of Fame player. So both guys are passionate. Both guys are veteran players. I understand the frustration out of Reggie Wayne. I kind of agree more with Reggie Wayne and what he's saying. I mean, I get with Ray Lewis's dance at the beginning of the game. That's what Ray normally does. But I kind of felt that it was kind of WWF, so to speak. It was more like a wrestling type of a propaganda spot at the end when they let Ray go on the field just to do his dance at the end. I thought that was a little extra.
But now, if he was in Indianapolis, I would say, okay, I can agree. Maybe it was, you know, you're on another person's field and you celebrate, but you're on your own home field. Your fans that you've been with, an original Baltimore Raven in your home, and you're going out. Possibly it could be your last time you ever play in that stadium. Your fans want to go out with the bang. So I don't feel it was been that he was on his own. It's just like, okay, me dancing in my front yard.
Right.
How am I disrespecting my neighbors if I'm dancing in my front yard? Because this is the house that Ray built.
Right.
That Ray built. And I'm a firm believer in this. And I say this. If you don't want me to dance, you beat me. You beat me on the field. If you don't want me to celebrate, it takes me back to when T.O. celebrated in Dallas on the star. Now, that was disrespectful. But a simple reason, you wasn't in San Francisco. You was in Dallas. And you went to the middle of their fear and raised your hands. That's disrespectful. Disrespectful. Ray Lewis did not do that. Ray did it at the end of the game. when the game was over and he was in his home stadium. Where else
do you know, I also think that Ray Lewis has understood that. I think this all worked out perfectly for Ray. You know,
exactly.
I think that once he got injured, I think that this was a perfect situation where he could come back and play one last game with his boys in his home stadium, the stadium, like you mentioned just a moment ago, that he built. And I think this is what Ray really wanted. I think Ray wanted to go out and win this game in Baltimore with the understanding that this is probably his last victory this past weekend that he just had over the Indianapolis Colts.
Because I don't think he could carry that momentum into Denver. I don't think that momentum is going to be able to transcend over into Denver with Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is a lot different from a guy over at Indianapolis, a quarterback over there. You're talking about a veteran that understands the game and that can thread a needle at the drop of a dime. So I think this game is going to be a little different. And then, like you said, this game is going to be played.
Totally.
Saturday, it's a Saturday 4:30 game. When we look at the comparisons of the two offenses now, and I looked at these comparisons, the offenses are pretty much neck and neck. The only margin of greatness is in the passing game, passing yards per game. You know, the Baltimore Ravens are per game putting up 233 yards. The Denver Broncos, 283 yards. When we look at total yards per game, you're looking at the Baltimore Ravens putting up 352, the Broncos putting up 397, and then rushing yards per game. The Baltimore Ravens have edged them out a little bit in that with 118, and the Denver Broncos at 114. So when you look at the offenses, they're kind of mirror each other. I mean, there's not a jump in comparison when it comes to the offense. The only thing I see that there is a major difference is when it comes to the quarterback position.
Right.
You know, you look at the quarterback position and it's a clear separation across the board. When you look at, Peyton Manning is a gunslinger, so their receivers have more yards than Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith, but you're talking about Anquan Boldin, who is a tough receiver. You saw him catch some big plays, big plays in that game last week. You see him, I mean, he's a physical guy that can change
a
game.
He's a very good wide receiver, but you know, the one thing about Anquan Boldin we must remember now, he was only held to one catch the last time the Denver Broncos played him.
Correct. Now,
I think that the Baltimore Ravens are going to definitely have their hands full. I mean, the Broncos have an 11-game winning streak, and they're 7-1 at home this season now. And being that game is in Denver, Colorado, I think this is going to be a tough affair. And like you just now said a moment ago, it's probably going to come down to which quarterback plays better. And Mr. Manning has won 9 games in a row against the Baltimore Ravens and is 7-2 lifetime against Ray Lewis. So Broncos are lined up right now to be able to possibly be able to beat the Baltimore Ravens this Saturday.
And as you stated, his record against Ray Lewis, because that's what they're going to bring this down to. They're going to going to beat this thing up to Ray Lewis against the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, against the Denver Broncos. And Peyton Manning, I think, is going to take advantage. You know, Ray has gotten older, so he's gotten a little slower. He can't, drop like he wants to. And I think Peyton Manning is going to take advantage of that. I'm quite sure he's somewhere right now looking at film, seeing how he can take advantage of Ray Lewis' age. Because I don't think, as I say, that hurrah is going to work in Mile High.
I agree. Ray had 13 tackles last week. And he, again, as we mentioned before, he had a great game last week in front of his home crowd. It was kind of like the way that Ray wanted to go out, so to speak. But as you just said, I mean, it's going to be a totally different environment in Mile High Stadium. 77,000 fans are going to be going crazy. I think it's going to cause a lot of problems for the Baltimore Ravens offense. I think Ray Rice has definitely got to get under control his fumbling problems. That's a big issue last week.
Correct.
The Colts were actually in that game. You know, let's not forget it was 10-6 at halftime, and Baltimore was barely beating the Colts. So they've got their hands full.
And let's get into another Saturday game that Saturday that will be played, and that's the Seattle Seahawks and the Atlanta Falcons.
Great game.
I had an opportunity. I was with Golden Tate and Sidney Rice at the national championship game. We hung out a little bit and we talked, and we talked about what this game is going to mean. And both guys, you know, because me and Mike was together, and Golden Tate, you know, he asked Mike, how could you pick us to lose all three games? All three games. How can you pick us to lose all three games? These guys understand what this means. I think Russell Wilson is not saying it, but I think he's trying to show America that, hey, I should have been a first-round draft pick.
I agree.
If you look at the first-round draft picks, you look at Andrew Luck, you look at RG3, he's outlasted all of them.
Yeah.
He's outlasted all both of those guys. So I think he's taking this thing more serious than ever. And when you look at the Atlanta Falcons now, you don't know which team – to me, you don't know what team you're going to get. Now, the best matchup, I think, of this whole game is going to be between Roddy White and Julio Jones against the big physical defensive backs of the Seattle Seahawks.
I agree. I think that's where the game lies right there too.
That's going to – but now, you know those – but now I'm going to tell you now, Julio can run.
Oh, that guy's a fast guy. But let's not forget now, over the top now, you know, they've got Earl Thomas, the safety for Seattle, who I think that they're going to roll over the top to be able to help double up Julio Jones. So who's a guy that you got to watch out for in this game? I think the Falcons, if they want to be effective, they're going to have to utilize Tony Gonzalez.
Exactly, exactly. How do you double out on Julio and you leave the middle open for Gonzalez to shred your linebackers?
Well, you're going to have to pick your poison, though, in that type of game. You know, you got so many weapons you got to cover. You know?
And that's
so, I mean,
that's going to be an interesting part of it. Go ahead, V.
No, you know, that's an interesting point that you just now said. You know, in terms of matchups, you know, if they wanted to do, they might, you know, put enough pressure and not double up Julio Jones, maybe try to drop another defender in the box to be able to create a blitz, and maybe that blitz pressure will be able to cause Matt Ryan to make quick throws instead of being able to plant his feet and maybe be able to make accurate long throws.
Correct. Now, let's get a little bit into the Sunday game, which will be New England and Houston. How do you see that game play out?
Well, you know, that's an interesting game. You know, as we remember, a couple weeks ago, Houston got obliterated by the New England Patriots in New England. So it's back to the same scene of a crime now for the Houston Texans. So it's going to be interesting to see if these guys can, you know, if they could put out a much better effort and try to figure out a way to stop Tom Brady and this explosive New England Patriots offense. It's going to be a tough task. I think that they possibly will give a better effort. But I do think that in the end, the New England Patriots will be victorious by about 4 to 5 points.
Correct. Now, let's get into a little bit of that Green Bay, San Francisco. Let's wrap that up.
San Francisco is a classic game, Tony.
Oh, man. What? Oh, yeah, but I'm a Green Bay fan, as you know. So, you know, let's cut through the chase. My Green Bay Packers are going to go to San Francisco and take care of business in the Bay. And get it done.
Well,
Aaron Rodgers,
I think, is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he's proven that. And I think now the Green Bay Packers have done the same thing that they did the year that they went on their Super Bowl run a few years ago, which is they've gotten healthy at the right time.
Exactly.
You got Jordy Nelson back now. You got Charles Woodson's back. Clay Matthews is back. So, you know, you've got a plethora of people now back in the mix now for this team. I think that they're poised to make a Super Bowl run, and I think that they're going to really give San Francisco a dose of something that San Francisco and a lot of people aren't expecting, Tony. I think I'm looking at maybe like a 30-17, 30-20 Green Bay Packer win.
And there you hear it here on the Tony Sands Show. My boy V. Carter, NFL insider, has given you his pick of that game. V, man, it was great having you on the show. My pleasure every time. Let's look to go throughout the playoffs, man, and bring you on the show, and we get into these matchups and get into what the Denver Broncos are doing, because it is a game that everybody will be watching, the Denver Broncos and the Baltimore Ravens. We're closing out the show here.
Great to be on here as always and everything, and hopefully the Denver Broncos will win this game this Saturday, and it'll be a matchup which I think will be New England Patriots and the Broncos next week. Maybe we'll chat again next week.
You got it, buddy. You heard that here on the Tony Sands Show. Thank you for listening. Another week of giving you great sports talk radio here on the Tony Sands Show. We're closing out the show. Thank you for listening.
It was already written, I would rise to the top. Now I give it everything that I got. Yeah, I'm gon' ball, yeah, I'm gon' be prepared for them suckers that be hating on me. Praise in the world, that's so cold. Why so much hate, I don't know. Stereotyped and they can't see how it is growing up as a young G.